This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. As we continue to look how the Trump administration's mass deportation policies are affecting Chicago, one element is key: the legal process. Immigration judges and courts can decide people's fates when they seek asylum, renew work visas, or applying for citizenship. And now some people heading to immigration court are conveying concerns that they'll be detained by ICE. To gain a deeper understanding of how immigration courts and appointments have functioned in the recent past, and how they have changed since the inauguration, we were joined by Carlina Tapiorano, an immigration lawyer. To discuss how advocates are preparing for more raids, we had Brandon Lee, spokesperson for the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Here's Carlina.
In general, and by law, not necessarily still occurring today, but by law, individuals who are in the United States, they are found in the United States in the immigration office, in ICE, if they're at the border, CBP, if they're in the United States beyond the border, they determine that they're in the country at that point without permission, then they charge them with the civil violation of being deportable. It's a civil administrative proceeding, although it does have severe consequences. Those individuals may be subject to arrest by the immigration agencies. And in general, everything's subject to exception, Michael, but in general, those individuals are eligible to request bond for release if they're not already released while their immigration court hearing is pending. And those cases can take a while because of the enormous over a million cases in backlog we have at the immigration court. So they can take a while to be processed to a conclusion. That's only for individuals who are placed in fact, what we call removal proceedings, deportation proceedings.
Carlina, how are immigration courts, how are they different from, say, circuit court appointments for things like speeding tickets that listeners may be familiar with?
Well, it's important to understand again that immigration courts are an administrative court, which is considered a civil proceeding, and those individuals do not have the same rights as individuals who are charged with crimes and go to criminal court. For example, individuals who are charged with immigration violations have a right to be represented, but at no cost to the government. In addition, unlike in civil proceedings, in most cases, the consequences of being charged with an immigration violation can frequently result in the loss of liberty to that individual. They can be detained, and they can be detained for a very, very long time if they are not eligible to be released on bond or simply cannot pay the bond amount. Another difference between immigration proceedings and criminal court is when you are arrested, detained, and then given a bond, you must pay the full amount of the bond, not a percentage, as you would if you were charged with a crime. And those bonds in the last few weeks have increased dramatically. A minimum bond in an immigration bond setting is $1,500, and those were frequently the bond amounts that individuals were offered to pay. But now, under this new administration, for the same kind of a case, typical case where there's no criminal history, it's just the person is being charged with an immigration violation and then given a bond, those bonds we are seeing are around $5,000, $6,000, $10,000, which must be paid in full for the person to obtain the release.
How has your interaction, Carlina, changed, or has it changed at all when you're dealing with, say, immigration prosecutor and judges?
It has changed dramatically since the new administration. And in particular, I would say just in the last 2 months, even though we are now in the fifth month of the new administration. And it has changed because, number one, many of the judges, I should let the listener know, I have been an immigration attorney in Chicago, and I've been in active practice for over 45 years. So I've known a lot of judges and a lot of prosecutors, and have had not only professional, but very friendly relations with many of them. However, since the new administration took office, many judges who, for various reasons, were considered not to be in line with the mission objective of the new administration, and I do mean that being the only reason, they were either not retained, because these judges are appointed by the office, the executive office, basically through the Department of Justice, through the Attorney General. They are appointed, they are not elected by the public. And the new administration fired or terminated or encouraged retirement, as the new administration did in other federal positions, for many individuals who the administration suspected would not be in line with its missions. And I lost a lot of colleagues that I had known for many years through this process. Wow. There is also new prosecutors who have been brought in, and they are very much under the thumb of their employers, their bosses, which goes all the way up to the White House, the president, in order to accomplish their mission. And those prosecutors are in fear of losing their jobs, as any other employed individual would be if they don't comply with their boss's objectives. So they have formally shut off any liaison and communication with defense counsel. This is all new during the as a result of the new administration. It's the policy: no communication, no liaison. We are now in the dark with regards to what they're doing, what they want to do, and even in certain cases, how we could even work together for the benefit of all parties involved. Sure. That just doesn't take place at all because there is silence on the other end.
Well, Brandon, have you heard from people in your network about how showing up at court has changed in the past few months?
Yeah, you know, it has. Within the last couple months, the anxiety around anything having to do with showing up to immigration court or check-ins has just been heightened. You know, one of the incidents from a couple weeks ago, from earlier in June, where people showed up for a check-in at the office in the South Loop, where people went in and didn't come out, and it shows the lengths to which the administration is going to set people up and put them in an impossible situation with no good outcomes.
You know, Brandon, ICER promotes something known as court watching. Explain what that is and the importance of community members showing up to court appointments to support people going through the immigration process.
Yeah, so our court watch program primarily up until now has been a virtual effort, monitoring virtual court hearings. We are looking at transitioning that to in person. I would also say that, you know, for people involved with community groups, people involved with mutual aid, people involved with church groups who have helped people apply for asylum or apply for temporary protected status, particularly over the last couple years, where Greg Abbott and other officials orchestrated this busing scheme to Chicago. The people that Chicagoans stepped up to help are going through some of these processes right now and are being called for check-ins and are being called for court dates. And it is important for those churches, those community groups, to show that people have community support, that that new arrivals are part of the their church communities or their mutual aid communities. And so just the mere act of showing up, both to show support for your community member and to show the judges as well is important.
Carlina, do your clients worry they will be arrested at court appointments?
Well, yes, Michael, there is a single client, not one client that I have at this time, and I have hundreds of clients who does not contact me, and I would say on more than one occasion, with the fear that if they appear in court, which they may be required to do, there are opportunities at times to appear virtually, certainly something that we as attorneys are trying to obtain for our clients more and more to avoid the fact that they could be arrested in the hallway of a courtroom house, which just sounds absolutely not only unjust, but it sounds disgusting to me that someone who appears in court at something they're compelled to do by law should be arrested in the hallways at the courthouse. In any event, we have these conversations not only for clients who are required to appear in court, but as Brandon was mentioning, at individuals who are required to appear at the immigration ICE office for a check-in, because if they don't comply with the invitation to check in, then their custody status can be altered, meaning they can be arrested for failure to check in. So again, these individuals, both going to court and going to the ICE appointments, are required by law to appear. And then when they appear, the new administration engages in what I as an attorney consider to be an unlawful interpretation of the law regarding expedited removal. I won't go into detail on that, but has this surprise tactic of terminating their hearing before the judge, which in many cases may mean terminating their applications for defense or for a benefit, which includes asylum. And then that individual is left with being in the country without the protection of the court and without status, and that is why they get arrested in the hallway. I consider that entrapment. That is the very definition of the word. Individuals who are complying with the law, attempting to meet the requirements of the law, and once they do, they are then detained and forced into a situation they did not anticipate, which is very harmful to them.
Carlina, you had a client recently who had an appointment to go to immigration court, but you instructed them to do a video call instead. Can you quickly just tell us what is the procedure for requesting a video call, and why did you suggest that they attend for video?
Well, I suggested that, starting backwards, I suggested that my client, who was required to appear at a hearing, and the notice indicated that it was an in-person hearing, and that individual wanted to comply with the law, which, by the way, is another ethical consideration, because many individuals now are fearful of complying with the law, and the attorneys cannot participate in recommending or advising illegal action, such as not to appear. Getting back to my client then was given a notice saying he had to appear in court. He contacted me saying he was very afraid of appearing in court because he had heard of many people in similar cases who were arrested. And I said it was true that that could be a risk he could run. So what we discussed is that we would appear via WebEx, which is a video appearance. Now, the problem with that, Michael, is you would think that, well, there are procedures of what judges will accept a video hearing, what judges won't. Those procedures, that information used to be made available to the public. Now, with the new administration, that has been removed from any website. We don't know what any particular judge requires if someone wants to appear via video, via WebEx. Now, something to note is that as recently as April 2025, meaning under the new administration, the chief immigration judge had sent out notices to all of her judges, or I should say acting chief immigration judge, had sent out notices to all of her judges saying, we encourage you to have video appearances. They are very efficient. They save the court and personnel time and resources. In as many cases as possible, please try to conduct all of your hearings video. But what happened? What happened? And by the way, that instruction has not been changed to our knowledge. Nevertheless, what happened is in May, then new instructions went out to ICE officers and also to the judges, instructing them to cooperate with their prosecutors and ICE officers, not theirs, but with the prosecutor and ICE officer, and dismissing cases. And once the case is dismissed, then the individual is arrested in the hallway. Well, that means most people would want to appear in a video format. But now many judges are refusing to allow immigrants to appear via video format, although that's the very process that was recommended by their chief judge as recently as April.
It doesn't
take any great mind to conclude that the reason that they are discouraging video appearances by immigrants is because they want to have the opportunity of arresting them in the courthouse. And that, again, is, in my mind, unconscionable.
Well, Brandon, part of the key part of ICER's advocacy is informing communities about their rights if they're confronted by ICE agents. So what kind of worries are people having at the at your Know Your Rights workshops?
Yeah, so, you know, there are Know Your Rights workshops, and we're also trying to distribute this information as quickly as possible at check-in locations like the ISAP office in the South Loop and at Broadview, which is the ICE processing center. I think, you know, a lot of what Carlina was bringing up about people being afraid of going to their appointments, not knowing what will happen, that is the fear that the administration is trying to create, and it speaks to the situations that they are trying to force people into. You know, we are just trying to make sure that people are able to put together a quick safety plan, memorizing a phone number for an attorney, family member, or hotline number, arranging for care for your children at home, and making sure that your key documents are in a safe place. I think it's really important to make sure you're attending check-ins with family members and with community to show the degree that we're in this together.
Tell us about the hotline number.
Of course. Yes, our Family Support Network hotline is 855-435-7693. People can call it to report suspected ICE sightings in your neighborhood. And additionally, if one of your family members has been taken by ICE, you can call it to get connected to community or legal resources.
You got like 20 seconds. Do you recommend people confronting ICE agents? We're seeing videos all around the country confronting ICE agents. What do you think about that?
No, we don't advise that people intervene with ICE. Our priority is making sure that people know their rights and making sure that people have a safety plan and making sure that Trump's big budget bill does not pass, because that is just going to accelerate funding for ICE.
Well, that is Brandon Lee, spokesperson for the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. And I also want to thank immigration lawyer Carlina Tapia-Rano. Thank you to both of you. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ariyan Kumar. It was edited by Linnea Dominic and mixed by Ari Mejia. Here on Reset, we want to keep you informed and connected by subscribing to the podcast or visiting us at wbez.org/reset. You can make sure you never miss a conversation. I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.